Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Midland Health, Appointment Needed to Receive Vaccine, by Caitlin Randall. As Midland Health continues to vaccinate 1,000 people a day at the Horseshoe Complex, CEO and President Russell Myers on Tuesday debunked a social media post that said the vaccine was open to everyone and asked that residents not come to the facility without an appointment. The Texas Department of State Health Services has opened the vaccine only for phases 1A, frontline workers, and phase 1B, individuals 65 and older or with chronic medical conditions. A popular post on the Nextdoor app incorrectly stated that Midland Health was allowing anyone to get the vaccine with or without an appointment because of no-shows. That is absolutely incorrect, Myers said during a unified command team press conference. It has never been correct, and we do not want people to show up at the Horseshoe without appointments, and we do not want people who are not in the 1A or 1B categories to try to schedule appointments. Midland Health officials have previously said that anyone who does not qualify for the vaccine will be removed from the appointment waitlist. The DSHS estimates the vaccine will be open to the general public in the spring. If you're not in those categories, 1A or 1B, your time will come, Myers said. There have been a significant number of people who have missed their appointments, according to Myers. To help mitigate that issue, Midland Health has created a team to call and schedule appointments and answer questions related to appointments. They were previously confirming appointments by text message or email. Still, only about 1 in 20 people are answering their phones, Myers said. He asked that anyone who has added their name to the waitlist be prepared to receive a call from the hospital's main number, 221-1111. Myers also asked that anyone who added their name to the waitlist more than a week ago and has not heard from Midland Health to register for the waitlist again. He said staff have contacted everyone they could who has been on the list longer than that and are prioritizing new entries. There have been reports nationwide of individuals who don't qualify for the vaccine using connections or other means to jump the line. Some people have begun waiting outside facilities that are distributing the vaccine, hoping workers will offer it to them if there are leftover doses, according to a CNN report. The Pfizer vaccine spoils within a few hours of being thawed, meaning staff must quickly find others to get vaccinated if there are extra doses from missed appointments. Myers said Midland Health will call others on the wait list or offer it to certain population subsets like teachers if they have extra doses. Midland Health has distributed some doses to hospitals in Howard, Brewster, and Martin counties and will soon begin sending doses to Glasscock County, Fort Davis, and Marfa. Beginning Friday, they will start vaccinating qualifying patients who are homebound, Myers said. He estimated there are about 300 of those individuals in the community. Midland Health had administered 13,486 vaccine doses as of Tuesday morning, according to Myers. He said they're expecting to continue vaccinating 1,000 people a day at the Horseshoe for the foreseeable future. Those who qualify for the vaccine and wish to register for the waitlist can do so at midlandhealth.org/vaccine. This article is entitled Local Chin Population Concerned with Events in Former Home Country by Stuart Doreen. The local Chin population inside Midland has concerns with what is taking place in the former home for many of them, Myanmar. The Associated Press has reported a coup in Myanmar has left the military in control under a one-year state of emergency. While the country's de facto leader, Aung San Suu Kyi, and other senior politicians have been detained. Having the military in control is a worry for Midlanders with family back in the former country of Burma, which is bordered by China to the northeast, Thailand to the southeast, and Bangladesh and India to the west. Solomon Chan, church secretary for Midland Chin Baptist Church, told the Reporter-Telegram this week that as long as the military is in control, that the people in Myanmar have no rights. He said that includes religion. He said that Buddhism is the main religion in the country, and that those in the military see Christianity as white people worship, and those practicing Christianity in Myanmar are oppressed, even having places of worship torn down. The Associated Press has reported that television signals were cut across the country, as was the phone and internet access in Naypyidaw, the capital, while passenger flights were grounded. Phone service in other parts of the country was also reported down, though people were still able to use the internet in many areas. Also, barbed wire roadblocks were set up across Yangon, the largest city, and military units began to appear outside government buildings. Chan, 37, said that people he's been in touch with don't go anywhere. He said he and other Chin in Midland worry about human rights issues. Chan estimated the population of Chin people in Midland is greater than 1,000. He said there are 5 churches in Midland, and that Midland Chin Baptist Church has 495 members in Midland, an additional 25 to 30 that live outside the region. Chan said the growth of the Chin population in Midland started in 2007, and that word of mouth helped build the population, which includes around 400 that have become U.S. citizens. He said Chin community businesses owned include 3 Asian grocery stores and 4 sushi restaurants. He also said that Chin residents own around 200 homes in the community. This article is entitled "Petition Addresses Cat Problem at Permian High School" from Staff Reports. Is there a cat problem at Permian High School, home of the Panthers? Ector County ISD reports some cats have been, quote, living at the PHS campus for the past few years, and we are now discovering they have multiplied and are beginning to cause some problems, unquote. The student wants the cat to be kept, according to the ECISD communications officer. The principal has been in touch with an animal rescue organization that will help them with a plan to deal with the issue safely. I think they will have more worked out in the coming days. Hearing there was a cat problem led one person to create a petition at change.org for Delessa Stiles, principal of Permian High School. The petition, created by Piper Sullivan to keep the Permian cats, has received 1,121 online signatures as of 3 p.m. Tuesday. The petition reads, "Getting rid of the cats at Permian High School is not a good idea from the start. They do so much for the school and students and staff alike. They're used for learning opportunities and bring up the student morale during the school day. The famous botanical garden is a favorite place for some of the cats as they watch student life through the big windows. They're important for a bigger reason, too. Anyone can tell you that the mice, rats, and even bats are a big problem for the high school. These rodents can carry diseases and germs, which is detrimental, especially in the midst of a pandemic. Cats take care of a majority of this problem, creating an arguably safer environment for the students and staff over getting rid of them and taking chances with the rodents. Even further, local organizations have volunteered to trap, spay, neuter, vaccinate, and release the cats, making them that much safer around people. This begs the question that is easily answered. Do we keep our awesome cat helpers, or do we let the rodent population in the school pose a bigger threat to the building and its students and staff? This article is entitled "Ex-Teacher Charged with Improper Relationship Arrested in Midland," from Staff Reports. A former San Angelo ISD teacher was arrested Saturday in Midland on 2 arrest warrants for improper relationship with a student. Cole A. Larson, 23, was charged with indecency with a child by contact and improper relationship between educator and student, both second-degree felony charges. San Angelo ISD officials contacted the San Angelo Police Department Crimes Against Children Unit on November 14th with information about a possible improper relationship between a teacher, identified as Larson, and a 14-year-old student, according to a Facebook post from the SAPD. Larson was arrested by Midland Police Department without incident, according to the SAPD Facebook post. Additional charges may be pending the outcome of this ongoing investigation, according to SAPD. Larson's teacher's certificate is inactive, according to the State Board for Educators Certifications website. It also states this individual is currently under review by the TEA Educator Investigations Division. This article is entitled "Task Force Arrests Man Connected with Al's Grocery Store Shooting," from Staff Reports. A man connected with a shooting at Al's Grocery Store on November 9th has been arrested, according to the U.S. Marshal's Office. The U.S. Marshal's Service Lone Star Fugitive Task Force and the East Texas Fugitive Task Force, in coordination with the Midland Police Department, Texas Rangers, Midland County Sheriff's Office, Collin County Sheriff's Office, and McKinney Police Department, arrested Caleb Robert O'Neill in McKinney, a northern suburb of Dallas. O'Neill was charged with 2 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and 1 count of aggravated assault causing serious bodily injury. He will be transported to the Collin County Detention Center. This is the opinion page. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled "Ted Cruz is Right. We Need Term Limits for Members of the House and Senate," by Cynthia M. Allen, Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Senator Ted Cruz seems to have a penchant for improbable causes. If he's not trying to audit the presidential election results, he is seeking to amend the Constitution. Last week, he joined 5 other senators in introducing an amendment that would limit terms for members of Congress. It's a pie-in-the-sky attempt at political reform that has failed before, because what politician is going to knowingly truncate his or her own political career? A constitutional amendment needs to be passed by 2/3 majorities in both houses of Congress. It also must be ratified by 3/4 of state legislatures, adding to the unlikelihood of it ever becoming reality. But in the case of Cruz's proposal, it would be worth the effort. The amendment Cruz introduced would limit senators to 2 6-year terms and House members to 3 2-year terms, although no term beginning prior to the amendment's ratification would count. There's the loophole for people like Cruz. Sneaky. That caveat aside, 12 and 6 years should be plenty of time for any ambitious and capable policymakers to, quote, make a difference, as they say. Presidents get a maximum 8 years in the office, after all, which is more than enough time to upend federal policy. Is there any good reason why lawmakers aren't similarly bridled? Opponents of term limits worry about the brain drain they would cause, leaving the difficult and often technical work of legislating to a revolving door of inexperienced politicians. That would further empower seasoned bureaucrats who serve as congressional staff to the extent that they aren't already running a lot of things in Washington. Senator Pat Toomey, a Pennsylvania Republican who co-sponsored the term limits amendment, says that the opposite is true. He and former Philadelphia Mayor Ed Rendell, a Democrat, argued in the Philadelphia Inquirer last October that term limits wouldn't deplete wisdom and knowledge, but infuse Congress with real-world experience, perspectives, and sensibilities that are often missing in Washington. Anyone who thinks he's wrong must have missed House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's multi-million-dollar home tour during a COVID-19 lockdown that featured a freezer full of $13 a pint ice cream. This while many of her constituents were forced out of work. Pelosi has been in Congress for more than 3 decades, by the way. Some critics of term limits claim they are fundamentally undemocratic because they arbitrarily restrict voters' choices. Just vote the bums out. That would be a fine argument if voter turnout were consistently high and voters were always educated about issues and candidates. We know they are not. Even if they were, the Trump era has illustrated what is perhaps the best argument for term limits in these polarized times, limiting the power of political parties. There are lots of reasons why congressional incumbents seeking re-election win 80 to 90% of the time. Most of them have to do with party money and support during re-election campaigns. It's a lot more difficult to stand up for principles, especially when they are unpopular within your own ranks, when your once allies are threatening to cut off your campaign financing or are ready readying a primary challenger. More often than not, our politicians who act independently of party are those who are not seeking re-election. Just ask Toomey. He has been one of the more outspoken critics of Donald Trump and was one of only 5 Republican senators to reject an attempt to dismiss the former president's second impeachment trial. He is retiring in 2022 after his second term is over. It would be nice if more politicians knew when it was time to step aside. It'd be nicer still if the public was so engaged that political entrenchment wasn't possible. Since that's not the case, term limits would help restore some credibility to our political system. It's slightly ironic that one of the biggest champions of term limits is a man who seems made for a lifetime in politics. But I won't question his integrity on this one. Good luck, Senator Cruz. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021. Devereaux Smith Bruner, March 20th, 1924 to January 24th, 2021. Born to Mary Jarrett Smith and William Haynes Smith in Ardmore, Oklahoma. Devereaux was first and foremost a devoted, caring, and nurturing mother to her 2 sons. Devereaux was preceded in death by her husband Ross and a sister Virginia, who passed at the age of 9 years. She is survived by her son William Reggie Bruner of San Antonio, his wife Marie Quero Bruner, her son Robert Robin Devereaux Bruner of Midland, Texas, and his wife Catherine Sneed Bruner. She is also survived by 7 wonderful grandchildren and 9 great-grandchildren, all of whom she deeply loved and was very proud of. A private internment will be attended by immediate family members at the Smith family plot in the Rose Hill Cemetery, coordinated by Harvey Douglas Funeral Home of Ardmore. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that you please make a generous donation to the Society for the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals in Devereaux's name. Jesus Francisco Acosta. Jesus Francisco Acosta, 71, of Midland, passed away on January 31st in Midland. Rosary will be held on Wednesday, February 3rd at 7 p.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Midland. Funeral Mass will be held on Thursday, February 4th at 1 p.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Jesus was born on October 4, 1949, to Arminda Gutierrez and Arturo Acosta in Mexico. Jesus is survived by daughters Maria E. Acosta, Brenda, Maricela, and Jessica. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Melba Loreen Preston Sykes. Melba Loreen Preston Sykes was born in the tiny hamlet of Hale Center, Texas, on Monday, August 18, 1930, to Arnette Carey, A.C., and Dulcia Faye Preston, and was welcomed into the arms of her loving Savior on Saturday afternoon, January 23, 2021. Melba is preceded in death by her husband of 61 years, Abbott B. Happ Sykes, her middle son, Stephen Preston Sykes of Odessa, two of her three siblings, her sister, Quaifa Lewis of Springfield, Missouri, and her brother, Carl Preston of Abilene, Texas, and her parents, A.C. and Dosia Preston of Big Spring, Texas. Melba is survived by her daughter and son-in-law, Judy and John Dalton of Cloudcroft, New Mexico, her two sons, Barry of Odessa and Nathan of Providence, Rhode Island. Her remaining sibling, an older sister, Margie Weller, resides in Denver, Colorado. Mom is also survived by her five grandchildren and five great-grandchildren, as well as many dear friends. In lieu of flowers, memorial gifts can be designated to Youth Ministry, Grace Christian Fellowship, 3450 Billy Hext Road, Odessa, Texas. A celebration of Melba's life will be on Wednesday, February 3rd at 1 p.m. in the sanctuary of Grace Christian Fellowship. Burial will follow this celebration with a graveside service at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death Notices. Graciela Aguirre Subia. Graciela Aguirre Subia, 66, of Midland, passed away Friday, January 29th. Viewing will be Wednesday, February 3rd from 2 to 9 p.m. and Thursday, February 4th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. Thursday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass is set for Friday, February 5th at 9 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. She is survived by her husband, Raul Salazar, one daughter, Elizabeth Estrada.
Odessa American for Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021. Vaccines at Radcliffe continues today, by Frederico Martinez. While some Odessa nursing home residents are not receiving COVID-19 vaccinations because the state health department decided to switch strategies and focus on mass vaccinations at large venues, local health officials said they are working to see that this vulnerable population isn't left behind. During a Zoom conference on Tuesday, health officials said the problem is many nursing home residents and people with disabilities are physically unable to be transported or accommodated at sites such as Radcliffe Stadium in Odessa. Medical Center Hospital Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Abbott Timmons said. A month ago, most homes were planning to have residents vaccinated through smaller facilities like CVS or Walgreens, Abbott Timmons said. But the state changed its strategies and the plans at nursing homes fell apart. We've been working with several nursing homes to arrange vaccinations. We've been able to help get some residents transported to Ratliff Stadium. We're still talking to other nursing homes and patching together a plan. The Texas Department of State Health Services, which is overseeing nursing home vaccinations throughout the state, could not be reached for comment on Tuesday. In Odessa, COVID-19 Pfizer mass vaccination efforts will resume at Ratliff Stadium from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. today through Friday, MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin said. The hospital on Monday received their weekly shipment of 3,900 doses of the Pfizer vaccine, Tippin said. Last week, MCH, along with Odessa Incident Command, distributed about 9,000 shots in just over 4 days before running out. We've requested an additional 5,000 doses per week, which would give us almost 9,000 doses, but have not received an answer from the state yet, Tippin said. We're ready. We want to get those shots in people's arms. If anyone from the state is listening, read my lips. Send us another 5,000 doses. Tippin added, I think we've shown we can have great success when it's a locally controlled effort. Abbott Timmons said the public should only go to Ratliff Stadium to receive their first vaccination shot. Second doses will be administered at MCH clinics beginning in February. Details of how and where to obtain second shots will be announced within the next week. The state's decision to focus on mass vaccination efforts has left other hospitals and even Ector County's health department in short supply of vaccines. County Health Authority Dr. Babatunde Jinadua said the health department currently has 200 doses of the Moderna vaccine. That supply is already earmarked for those who are waiting their second shot. The county requested another 500 doses, which has not yet been approved by the state, Jinadu said. Odessa Regional Medical Center's Chief Medical Officer Rohit Saravana said the hospital is currently waiting for a promised shipment of 100 doses of the Moderna vaccine. The hospital requested 1,000 doses, but were only approved for 100. Saravana said ORMC has been working with MCH to distribute their vaccinations. On Tuesday, ORMC reported 21 COVID-19 patients, 15 in intensive care, and 4 on ventilators. MCH reported 45 patients, 24 in intensive care, and 19 on ventilators. Honoring fallen hero Chris Kyle. The caption reads, the Chris Kyle Memorial is seen on the 8th anniversary of his death. Texas Governor Greg Abbott declared February 2nd to be proclaimed Chris Kyle Day in 2015. Chris Kyle was a United States Navy SEAL sniper who was the subject of the blockbuster movie American Sniper and known for his meritorious service to his country and fellow veterans following his honorable discharge in 2009. A native of Odessa, Kyle was born in 1974 and began his military service in 1999. Hector's board okays working with ECISD by OA News at OAOA.com. With the non-renewal of Hector County ISD's contract with the Hector Success Academy Network, teachers had a chance to voice their concerns to the Charter Schools Board. The agreement between ECISD and Hector College Prep Success Academy lasts through June 30th, and this ECISD Board voted to non-renew the contract January 19th. The board had two executive sessions, February 1st at Hector County College, Prep Success Academy, one at the start of the meeting and the other at the end. The meeting was attended by about 30 teachers in person and about 60 over Zoom. CEO Superintendent Robert Blesk said the board was meeting with its attorney to discuss options to pursue because of the non-renewal. Board President Zeynep Muniz said ESAN is happy to work with ECISD for the sake of a smooth transition for our students and our teachers, and we are directing our legal counsel to reach out to ECISD's legal counsel as directed in closed session. Senate Bill 1882, signed into effect by the Texas Legislature in 2017, provides incentives for districts to contract to partner with an open enrollment charter school institutions of higher education, nonprofits, or government entities, the Texas Education Agency website says. Hector was in its fifth year of improvement requirement under state accountability standards. If it didn't come off the list, it could have faced closure, or the Texas Education Commissioner could appoint a board of managers over the whole district. Blexus Hector Success Academy Network as a way to stay sanctions from the Texas Education Agency for 2 years. The board encouraged teachers to let their ideas and concerns be known to the entity the school district chooses to go with. Board member Sandra Eoff said, as a board member since 2018, she stands 100% behind the staff and teachers. "We've been happy for the success that they've received," Eoff said. She added, "It's unfortunate that they didn't have recent test scores to back up their achievements. We're happy to say that we're very proud of what you've done. We will change as the board and with a new transition, but you stay and you're the constant. You're there for the kids and for the families, and we appreciate that," Eoff said. "I've talked to family members and they're 100% behind you guys, so thank goodness you're the constant." Board President Zeb Muniz said the Hector Eagles has come to mean a lot of things to us. "It's a big symbol of who we are as a school and a community. A lot of the questions you have, we don't have the authority to answer. The authority is now with another entity," Muniz said. She added that she encourages the teachers to make your voice heard. Muniz said she's going to continue to advocate that the new entity involves teachers. Teacher Leroy Riviera, who has been teaching for 28 years, said he's very appreciative of the board. I've seen some outstanding programs, but this one's far above them, and I just wanted to say my hat's off to y'all, and y'all did an outstanding job, Riviera said. He added that he's crushed that they will be losing the board. Riviera said his concerns is for the students. I just hope we don't lose what we gained with y'all, he added. Belch said, was the leadership transition occurred at the ECISD administration office, things got difficult behind the scenes, Belch said. Promises made and agreements made were not kept, he said. He said he could have handled it differently. I'm very passionate about kids, and I'm passionate about teachers, and I'm passionate about keeping my promises. And I couldn't face you all and not fight, and so when those things started happening in the district, and they started going back on promises and agreements, I started fighting, Blesch said. Hector Principal Mitch Gearidge said he was a little surprised by the ECISD board decision not to renew the contract. I was hoping that we would still remain doing what we were doing. That was the main focus because what we do is good for kids, and it does make an impact on their education. With the double block schedule and the intervention time that we have, the extended day, everything we do to incentivize students in the reteaching and the reassessment, it's all built in here. It's making a difference, Gearidge said. The kids are making progress. There's no doubt. It's just too bad that we had no accountability the last 2 years to show. Gearidge said there is a double block schedule each day. We have an A day and a B day, but we've doubled block the ELAR, English, Language Arts, and Reading, and math classes for all grade levels. So not only do they get a double block for that, but they also have an additional reading and math class that every student attends, except for 8th grade. 8th grade has social studies and science that they have to attend, as well as, so we couldn't double block it. The emphasis is on reading, of course, because if you can't read, you're not going to be successful, Gearidge said. That's a huge component of what we do across the curriculum. We have innovative literacy that all students participate in, regardless of whether it's PE or mariachi. They all participate in the literacy portion of it. That has a huge impact on the students and their language development and reading ability. 369 days. For 369 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6, the city has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County numbers are not updated daily. ECISD daily cases, 6 students, 9 staff. U.S. cases, 26,160,210 total confirmed and 441 1,831 deaths. Find out more at dhsh.state.tex.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tztrjlf. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/y6ntptuq. Also from the front page, COVID-19 vaccines. Medical Center Hospital will be administering Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine at the drive-thru clinic at Ratliff Stadium, South Main Entrance. The clinic will start at 9 a.m. and gates close at 2 p.m. today and Thursday, and tentatively will open on Friday only if vaccines remain. Clinic is for Phase 1A frontline workers and Phase 1B, most at risk, and for ages 65 and older. Online registration requested for quicker on-site processing. For those that are not able to register online, will be enrouted to a waiting area to register before vaccination. Wear short sleeve clothing, easy to access arm. Bring a valid driver's license or other photo ID. To pre-register or for more information, visit mchodessa.com. For those looking for a way to help, email volunteering@odessa-tx.gov. Odessa Regional Medical Center, 520 East 6th Street, is expecting COVID-19 vaccine soon. The vaccine is free of charge while supplies last. Please check on vaccine availability. For more information, call 432-582-8549 or visit tinyurl.com/y3jqhz89. Walgreens is expecting COVID-19 vaccine soon. For more updates or information, visit tinyurl.com/y31nwu83. HEB has requested more COVID-19 vaccine from the state of Texas. Once they have vaccine, eligible customers can sign up using the scheduler to receive a COVID-19 vaccine at no cost. To sign up, updates, or information, visit vaccine.heb.com. CVS stores will soon have no-cost COVID-19 vaccine available. They will administer in a phased approach based on state guidelines when available to pharmacies. For updates or information, visit tinyurl.com/y508qje4. Walmart and Sam's Club pharmacies are taking steps to prepare to administer COVID-19 vaccines. For updates, visit tinyurl.com/y5k95kzn. Local News Roundup. Celebrating Black History Month, the Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, is celebrating Black History Month by featuring a short video on African American artists, followed by a community discussion in partnership with UTPB from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. each Thursday. Featured artists will be Faith Ringgold, Betty Sars, Kyan Wiley, and Kara Walker. For more information, call 550-9696 or visit www.noelartmuseum.org. D. Now, back to basics. First Baptist Church, 709 North Lee Avenue, has scheduled D. Now, Going Back to the Basics, Looking at the Gospel Through a Lens, starting at 7 p.m. Friday through Sunday. All students 6th through 12th grade are welcome. There will be evangelism, games, food, fun, special speaker, and band. Cost is $50 per person. Sign up at fbcodessa.com/dnow. Exhibit, curated and hosted by Midland College Art Department, the exhibit featuring the work of Juana Estrada Hernandez will be on view through February 12th in the Allison Fine Arts McCormick Gallery on the main MC campus, 3600 North Garfield Street, Midland. Hernandez is working on her Master of Fine Arts in Printmaking at the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque. Her artwork is reflective of the social and political problems surrounding the DACA community. Hernandez immigrated to the United States at the age of 7 with her family from Zacatecas, Mexico. Her work is inspired by her early childhood experiences growing up in the U.S. as a young undocumented immigrant. The McCormick Gallery is open from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., Monday through Thursday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Fridays. Due to the COVID pandemic, face masks are required inside the gallery at all times. Admission is free and open to the public. For more information, contact Dagan Sherman at 685-4653 or email dsherman@midland.edu. Council hears OC agreement details. OA News at oaoa.com. The Odessa City Council, during a virtual work session on Tuesday, discussed issues ranging from the Federal Payroll Protection Program, PPP, a contract for road sealant, and to consider an economic development agreement between the Odessa Development Council and the Odessa College Foundation. Crystal Villegas, a Frost Bank representative, detailed that the second round of the PPP is open to applications from local businesses and that this round of the funding can also be accessed by nonprofits, saying, "We've all been impacted by this," Villegas said. Those needing information can visit sba.gov for instructions in both English and Spanish. She said businesses must be able to show a 25% reduction in gross receipts due to the pandemic. She added that $184 billion was allocated by the federal government for the program. The loans provided by PPP can eventually be turned into a forgiven grant for those who meet the criteria. The deadline to apply is either March 31st or until the funding runs out. Council also heard details about Odessa College's new Health Science Center, which is scheduled to break ground on the campus in the fall of this year. Wesley Burnett, Director of Economic Development, detailed for Council the economic development agreement between ODC and Odessa College Foundation for the new construction. Burnett said the 83,000 square foot building will cost almost $40 million, and OC President Gregory Williams said OC has donations and other funding for much of the cost of the building. Burnett touted the workforce training aspect of the partnership with OC and said 44 jobs will be retained and 16 new jobs created with more than $1 million in the payroll. Williams told Council the new center will create jobs and produce a record number of students working in the health science field. Council also heard a presentation to amend the 2020-21 budget by appropriating an additional $102,536.92 for the cost of the general election and runoff elections. A runoff on city council and costs associated with COVID cleaning and extra voting days as required by Texas Governor Greg Abbott, also factored into the higher cost. City Manager Michael Marrero presented to the council information on an application to the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs for 2021 competitive 9% housing tax credit for Woodcrest Apartments. Marrero said Woodcrest Apartments can apply for a tax credit to allow the developer to move residents to another area and to demolish the 74 units that are 50 years old and to build new units. He said all residents will be relocated and that the contractor will be responsible for costs associated with the move. The residents are all part of an affordable housing project. Phil Fisher with Sonoma Housing said the long-term objective is to serve long-term low-income housing. He said the program will not cost the city, but rather is a federal program, and that it would allow newer and more efficient housing. He said the program requires a resolution of support from the city during the February 9th City Council meeting, and said the project would begin in the fall. The construction costs will be around $14 million and will take about 12 to 14 months to complete. There are currently 74 households living there now. HUD pays about two-thirds of the rent for most of the property now. Many residents are elderly or disabled. Fisher said the new units could last as long as 40 years. Man charged with choking wife, injuring child. OA News at OAOA.com. A 30-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly kicked in a door, choked his wife, and injured a child. Daniel Christian Martinez was charged with assault by strangulation, family violence, a third-degree felony, injury to a child, a state jail felony, and criminal mischief, a Class A misdemeanor. The reported assault happened around 11:55 p.m. January 27th in the 2700 block of Walnut Avenue, an Odessa Police Department affidavit stated. The victims were reportedly identified as Darlene Flores, the wife of Martinez, and an unidentified child. Officers saw the front door to the resident had been kicked in with damage to the front frame, along with a smashed mirror and TV lying on the floor. Martinez was found in the bedroom, and he was detained in handcuffs, the affidavit stated. Officers made contact with Flores and the child. The child had a small scratch with dried blood on the back of their neck. Flores had slight redness around her neck. The child reportedly told police they were asleep when they heard Flores choking along with some shouting. The child stated they came from the bedroom and found Martinez on top of Flores in the living room with his hands around her neck. Flores stated she was unable to breathe for a short period, the affidavit stated. Flores stated the child jumped on Martinez in an attempt to get him off of her. Flores stated Martinez grabbed the child with both hands around their neck in an attempt to choke them. The child stated they couldn't say if they could breathe because it happened quickly. Flores reportedly detailed to police that Martinez has no property in the residence and has not lived there for 4 months. Flores stated the damage to the property totaling $1,300. Martinez was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He had 3 bonds totaling $27,000, and he posted bail on January 29th, jail records show. Melba Loreen Preston Sykes, Odessa. Melba Loreen Preston Sykes was born in the tiny hamlet of Hale Center, Texas, on Monday, August 18, 1930, to Arnett Carey, A.C., and Dorcia Faye Preston, and was welcomed into the arms of her loving Savior on Saturday afternoon, January 23, 2021. Her life of 9 1/2 years was marked only by measles as a toddler and mumps when she was in her mid-20s, until dementia in her 80s was accelerated by a very brief COVID diagnosis in late 2020. She was a wonderful wife to Abbott B. Happ Sykes until his passing in December 2012. Melba is preceded in death by her husband of 61 years, Abbott B. Happ Sykes, her middle son, Stephen Preston Sykes of Odessa, Texas, 2 of her 3 siblings, her sister, Kepha Lewis of Springfield, Missouri, and her brother, Carl Preston of Abilene, Texas, and her parents, A.C. and Dosia Preston of Brick Spring, Texas. Melba is survived by her daughter and son-in-law, Judy and John Dalton of Cloudcroft, New Mexico, her 2 sons, Barry of Odessa, Texas, and Nathan of Providence, Rhode Island. Her remaining siblings and older sister, Margie Weller, resides in Denver, Colorado. Mom is also survived by 3 grandchildren and 5 great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, memorial gifts can be designated to youth ministry, Grace Christian Fellowship, 3450 Billy Hex Road, Odessa, Texas, 79765. A celebration of Melba's life will be on Wednesday, February 3, 2021 at 1 p.m. in the sanctuary of Grace Christian Fellowship. Burial will follow this celebration with a graveside service at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences, please sign our guestbook at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death Notices. Jesus Francisco Acosta, Midland. Jesus Francisco Acosta, 71, of Midland, died Sunday, January 31st, 2021, in Midland. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. February 4th, 2021, at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Midland. Rosary will be held on Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021, at 7 p.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Arrangements are by Nayley Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Sarah Lou Watts Carver, Odessa. Sarah Lou Watts Carver, 80, of Odessa, died Saturday, January 16, 2021, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. on Wednesday, February 10, 2021, at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will be held privately. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Guadalupe M. McVeigh, Odessa. Guadalupe M. McVeigh, 92, died Monday, January 25, 2021, in Odessa. Services are pending with Odessa Funeral Home, 7511 of Odessa. Irene Navarrete, Odessa. Irene Navarrete, 62, died Sunday, January 31, 2021, in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery, Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Margie Jo Farrell Newman, Odessa. Margie Jo Farrell Newman, 79, of Odessa, died Saturday, January 30th, 2021, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Jesse Ontiveros, Midland. Jesse Ontiveros, 67, of Midland, died Sunday, January 31st, 2021, in Midland. Funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m., February 17, 2021, at American Heritage Chapel. Burial immediately following at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.